I think for us is the first and foremost is just kind of having a better idea of how our offense operates. I mean, there's basically three reads to just about every play. So really it's going to be based on what Ryan sees based on our call. So if he sees one thing, he's going to take and throw it. He's going to, or he's going to give it. You know, that's part of that RPO offense. But obviously any offense is going to play to their strengths. And having a quarterback like Ryan Helinski and top receivers, we're going to try and get the ball into their hands. We understand the balance, and we're working really hard at that, is being consistent with it. But really a lot of times in our RPO offense is, you know, what they see.
Hello and welcome back to the Trinity League Football Podcast. I am Dan Albano, your host with OC Register and OCVarsity.com. And it is September 10th. 2018. I'm joined once again by our insider, Scott Barajas, as we delve deep again into the Trinity League football season. And Scotty, how are you doing this evening?
I'm doing pretty good, Dan. You know, getting ready for another week of exciting football, even though I know last week was a little less exciting than the previous week, with the exception of Saturday's Brother in Arms game, Jay Sarum Pinnacle game. And then there were some highlight close to record-breaking performances by a couple of players, you know, but I think other than that, we've kind of hit that lull portion of the schedule kind of leading up to a couple of big games and then anticipation of getting into those league games. So that's what, you know, we have on tap for what we're looking forward to.
All righty. Well, just to set the table, and that opening voice you heard was from Orange Lutheran coach, Coach Presley, who was talking about the Orange Lutheran offense, which is something that Scotty broke down in fine fashion last week about some of the trends. And we're going to close our show with more comments that we think you would enjoy from JP Presley, the coach of Orange Lutheran, who talks a lot about, you know, some of the decision making by Ryan Helinski and the run pass option offense and where they're trying to go. And there's really a lot that goes into it. And he gave us some nice insight without, you know, giving too much away. But he delved deep, and I know Scotty was. I know Scotty, you're going to be interested to hear those comments as well.
Yeah, probably, Dan, because I know we kind of were, you know, I don't want to say hard, but we kind of gave, kind of dove deep into the analyzed them pretty well. So it'll be interesting to hear what he has to say.
Yeah, and I think I think the Trinity League Football Podcast and some of the. Your analysis, Scotty, actually helps teams, and I think it's very helpful information. And I was wondering that as I was trading some text messages or social media comments with Caden Bell, the Jay Sarah quarterback, late Saturday night, and we talked about Jay Sarah's offense needing to get going in their passing game, and they certainly responded. And maybe it was the good karma from the Trinity League Football Podcast and Scotty Barajas' analysis.
Yeah, we'll see, you know, because you know, I got some more you know, some more insight, you know, that will probably help some teams out down the road. But that's good to know.
Now, of course, it does help that Jay Sarah welcomed back USC committed receiver Moonar McLean, so that always helps having a USC speed burner on your receiving core to go along with other guys like Tyler Shiramura, who had a huge game as well, but both those guys were right around 100 yards. Tyler went well over, and Moonar was just under 100 yards. But to set the table tonight, we're going to review last week's games. Like we said, some pretty sneaky good games in there, especially, you know, highlighted by the great Jay Sarah comeback against Pinnacle of Arizona. So we'll have our recaps and our grades from last week. Servite had another big win to improve to 3-0. St. John Bosco rolled along. We'll also have our players of the week for last week's. And then we'll also take a preview at this week's games. We have one team on the bye, and who might that be, Scotty?
That's going to be Santa Margarita.
And there's one other. No, Santa Margarita plays this week, Scotty.
Oh, that's next week. Modern Day's on the bye this week.
Modern Day's on the bye, yeah. Getting ready for IMG coming up on September 21st. But that's, we have one team on the bye. Santa Margarita does play this week, but they play on Saturday. So we'll be talking about games mostly Friday, September 14th. One game on the 15th of September. And, of course, we're going to wrap up our show again with a couple comments, an audio interview we did with Orange Lutheran coach J.P. Presley. So thanks again to all the Trinity League football fans that are joining us. Sky and I trying to bring you the inside scoop, delving into some numbers. We can even count Steve Fryer as one of our listeners, Scotty. So I think we're on the right track here.
Yeah, that sounds good. That sounds like we're getting a little bit more other listeners that are in the feedback, and that's always nice to hear.
That's right. So we appreciate you listening. Share it with your hardcore Trinity League fans. Listen to us when you're at the gym, on your way, making a road trip to a game, getting out there early in your commute. Hook us up and give us a listen, and we're working hard for you. So, Scotty, recapping last week's games, let's start with that Saturday game. You know, it was a really rousing victory for Jay Serra, 42-35 against Pinnacle of Arizona, which at the time was the second-ranked team in the state of Arizona. And Jay Serra comes back from two 14-point deficits in the first half to play and win on a late touchdown run. But Scotty, you're going to tell us more about this this victory, which moved Jay Serra's record to 4-0. I think they're going to get out of the non-league season 5-0. Tell us more, Scotty.
Yeah, so I'm actually going to dive pretty deep into this game, so give more people of an insight rather than, you know, what, you know, you read in the paper, you know. So basically, this one was pretty much a shaky start from the get-go for Jay Serra, because Pinnacle scored on their first three possessions, you know, on big plays from Oklahoma-bound quarterback Spencer Rattler, who came back from an injury this week or last week. And, you know, it seemed, you know, that Jay Serra was in trouble. You know, they answered back with some big plays of their own. But, you know, Pinnacle was up 21-7, and, you know, they were ready to score again. And then Rattler underthrows the receiver, and I believe it was Storm Seeley picks it off in the end zone to stop Pinnacle's, which would have been their fourth consecutive scoring drive. Then that next play, Caden Bell hits Muno McClain, who was making his season debut, on a wide receiver screen where he takes a 73 yards, hurdling two defenders on the ground, took it all the way down to the 5-yard line. Then the next play, wow, Chris Streak punches it in. You know, so it cuts the lead 21-14. Huge swing, you know, just, you know, basically 28, you know, 7, 14, you know, it's like a whole, you know, 21-point spread swing there.
Wow. So,
Pinnacle actually, you know, took the ensuing possession and went 65 yards on a screenplay of their own for a touchdown. So, you know, then Pinnacle's back up 28-14. You know, but then Jay Serra came back, answered back with the Chris Street 44-yard touchdown run to get within 7 again. You know, and then after that TD, you could feel the momentum changing. You could see Jay Serra was able to keep Pinnacle in check. They weren't giving up the big plays anymore. You know, they kept, you know, Pinnacle from scoring to close the half out. The Pioneers actually tried a long field goal right before the half and didn't get in. But then the Lions took the second half kickoff, you know, marched right down the field and scored on the same wide receiver screen to Munar McClain on the other side of the field for about a 16-yard score, and that tied it up 28-28. So you could already feel the momentum, just like I said. Then that next possession for Pinnacle proved costly, as they were held to the 3-and-out, and then they ran a fake punt on their own 20-yard line with the backup quarterback, J.D. Johnson, who had been their quarterback the past two games. So, you know, he was doing really well. He drops back, and then he has a wide-open target, and he overthrows his receiver, who would have had a touchdown because there was no Lions in sight. So I think Pinnacle panicked, because you could sense that their guys were starting to run out of gas. So then the next play, Street goes 20 yards up the middle, give the Lions that 35-28 lead. And right there, it was pretty much, you could tell that that the momentum had totally swung to the Lions side. So the second half adjustments were huge, scoring 21 straight points, outscoring Pinnacle 28-7 in that second half. But the play that probably been the most critical, we, you know, that what was the difference was that Pinnacle had been also giving up 30 points per game, when we had mentioned that earlier. So that allowed, you knew that they weren't going to sustain and stopping Jay Serra. You knew that that eventually that probably was going to come back to haunt them. But they were able to get one more score to even it up at 35-35 But the Jason era basically wore down the Pioneers as Sean Nelson capped off the drive with a 6-yard run. And the big boy threw a juke and then cut back and scored. I mean, you have to see it on film. I mean, for a 265 guy, he plants his foot, cuts back, throws a juke on the linebacker and scores. So it was kind of nice for that big guy. And they scored that with 2 minutes left in the game. So, you know, and then Nelson's work wasn't done. You know, he was instrumental on that last scoring drive, registering 2 of his 3 sacks on that drive. And
really?
To close out the win for Jay Sarah. You know, this was a great, entertaining game. It had big offensive plays. You know, but up until that point, you know, there was all offense in the first half. There was all, you know, there was no defense to be seen at all. You know, offensively for Jay Sarah, Chris Street carried them. You know, he ran for 187 yards on 26 carries, had the 3 touchdowns. Caden Bell was 14 of 24 for 249, 1 touchdown, 1 pick. He was 54%. You know, those numbers sounded okay, but Jay Sarah still struggled to throw down the field because all their yards and the completions came from wide receiver screens or outs. He didn't complete, I think he completed one ball that was downfield. So that's something to still to keep an eye on. The return of Munar, you know, was huge. He had 6 catches for 97 yards and the 1 touchdown. So it shows that they have another weapon they can get the ball to, besides the wide receiver screens. You know, I think we'll have to see them, you know, progressively hit the guys downfield. Defensively, Jay Sarah, you know, pretty much had trouble with Rattler in the first half outside the pocket. He was making big plays, big catches by the receivers, but they were able to contain him in the second half despite him throwing 5 touchdowns and for over 350 yards. But here's a key observation. Even though Rattler is considered a dual threat quarterback, he's not as mobile and elusive as some of the other dual threat quarterbacks, especially Bryce Young. I also was surprised that he got sacked on plays where I think Bryce does not. So, because that last drive, Rattler didn't look as mobile as he did in the first half. And, because they ended up getting, I think, like 2 consecutive sacks on him. And also, no sophomore corner, Jamaze Duncan, didn't play. And I don't think there was somebody else that was missing. I didn't see Anthony Ward, so we have to check those guys.
Anthony played, according to the Jay Sarah max prep stats. He had 8 carries for 75 yards. But I don't know if that might be a mistake because they actually list him also having 2 touchdowns, which is not correct. So maybe.
But he didn't.
Yeah, you might be right on that. Maybe that's a mistake. I saw Ward listed with 2 TDs on another stats, and now he's listed as rushing. So it makes me wonder if I'll have to check on that.
Yeah. So basically, you know, it was a great win for them. You know, it was just a tale of two halves. With Jay Sarah being better on the second end of that second half. So, you know, offensively, the grades, you know, I'm going to give them a C-plus offensively and a B-plus on defense for coming down to that, you know, for evening out that second half.
I think you're a little hard on him for the offense,
a little
right?
For 42 points? Just from watching, I mean, you take Chris Street away, and I know I'm, you know, probably going to get a lot of flack from all this, but you take Chris Street away, I haven't seen enough, you know, for them to be, you know, to be consistent. I think he's carried them. He's done a lot for them. The throwing hasn't been consistent. I mean, Luckett had 1 catch for 5 yards. Like I said, Shimamura had some good catches, but they were all outside. They were all like 10 yards outs, and he actually had great yards after catch. So, you know, we'll just have to see. I know that, you know, they're 4-0 and that's all that matters. But, you know, like I said, we dive in and dissect a little more than what's, you know, on the surface. So,
yeah, I saw the Luckett numbers. Maybe he's playing more defense, you know.
He came in the last series to play defense, but he wasn't out there. I didn't see him out there during the most of the game.
Yeah, and we know with, you know, Luckett, I mean, I saw Jay Sarah against Corona Del Mar in their season opener, and he was hobbling through that game with cramps. And then they, you know, they've had a brutal schedule, so I would be surprised if Luckett's not a little banged up since he was already banged up in the first game, and then they went and played Calabasas and had that big game against Bishop Amont. The good news, you know, we'll have to see where he's at. And then San Diego State's probably rejoicing about Sean Nielsen as having a great recruit. you know, with such an athletic guy, maybe they're going to play him some fullback at that level. And the Max Preps stats had Spencer Rattler finishing with 458 yards on 44 attempts. So he was 26 of 44, so he was well under 50%. He was 450 yards, well over 50% passing at almost 60%. 26 of 44 with the one pick and four TDs. So he had a huge game.
Yeah, he did. And like I said, I mean, if you know, that first half, a lot of that stuff was broken down. He got outside the pocket, and I understand it's hard for those guys to stay with the DB with the receivers that long. And his receivers, you know, made some great catches. You know, they didn't have much of a running game. And you know, I think if you took away those big plays in that first half, that was what they ended up, you know, containing him in that second half. Yeah. But that momentum swing was huge. That punt, you know, not having to do that fake punt. But I think you know, got to give the JCR, you know, coaches props for coming up with a game plan in the second half to at least, you know, utilizing containing their, you know, Rattler in the pocket, because he didn't really get outside after in that second half.
Oh, that's good. Well, that's good for Jay Sarah, because one of the red flags that we identified, and we've been kind of talked a lot about Jay Sarah early, going back to when we talked about the Edison tournament, Edison passing tournament, that is, in early July and mid July. We talked about, you know, when we recapped the Redondo passing tournament, that was a big concern, was the secondary. But you just mentioned that one guy, Duncan, was out. And we've highlighted him on the podcast as being, you know, helping out. And so that might be something to watch is, you know, Jay Sarah, how much have they really fixed their passing, their secondary? Because their opener, as we know, coming up in the Trinity League is going to be St. John Bosco. And they have a certain quarterback there, a junior, and a certain great group of wide receivers. So coming up, so they're going to have to keep working on that, apparently. All right, let's switch back to the Friday games last week. Santa Margarita got a 55-7 victory over Mayfair of Lakewood. That evened Santa Margarita's record at 2-2. So that was an important victory for them to get. They bouncing back from consecutive losses. And they also got another great running effort from the running back, Jake, who ran for about 175 yards against Mayfair. So they're really running it really well. That would be, of course, Jake Thomas, 17 carries for 152 and 5 touchdowns. So he averaged over almost 9 yards a carry. So that's what they like to do. And Castelli had a, you know, very solid game, high percentage completion, 14 of 20 with a touchdown and no picks. What was your thoughts on this game, Scotty?
Yeah, pretty much the Eagles came in and took care of business with their win. It wasn't flashy. You know, it was basically workmanlike, blue-collar performance. And it all started with Jake Thomas. You know, it continues to be their workhorse, scoring those 5 TDs, you said, on over 152 yards. And then Caselli added another 235 for a passing and a one touchdown. You know, and he spread the ball out. He hit 7 different receivers.
Nice.
You know, like I said, wasn't really big numbers, but it was just consistent. You know, and defensively, they limited Mayfair to 244 yards of offense and holding them to 77 yards passing. And then yeah, Connor Burke led the way with 11 tackles, 2 for loss.
Yeah, so it was, like you said, a workmanlike and important victory for Santa Margarita to get. Let's also move next from last week. Let's see here. What's a good one to talk about? St. John Bosco, 56-12 over Paramount. That moved the Braves record to 4-0. There was obviously a lot of offense, and St. John Bosco took care of this one really early. Believe it or not, they were up 49-0 at halftime, and they only scored one more touchdown. So that tells you something about Coach Jason Negro, how they're not looking to run up anything on anybody. They're 49-0, and you see how they showed some good sportsmanship there. DJ didn't have a lot of tosses in this game. 6 of 8 for 80 yards, but four of his six completions went for touchdowns. Isaiah Sandina, a junior, also a junior just like DJ, 13 of 14 for 121 yards and two TDs. So he was almost perfect. Isaiah Saldana. Even Titus Toler threw a pass, probably some kind of trick play early in the game or something. But what was your read on this game, Scotty?
Yeah, you know, they had no resistance from, you know, P-Town, you know, Pirates in this one. You know, Bosco, you know, moved the ball at ease. I mean, 9 out of their first 16 plays were double-digit gains. You know, and then DJ, you know, was 6, like you said, 6 of 8. He had 4 touchdowns, 2 of them to Jude Wolf. And then, like you said, their backup, Isaiah Saldana, kind of mopped it up from there. And, you know, he had a whole, you know, a great performance in his own mind with that almost scoring the perfect, having those two TDs. And then defensively, it was 42-0 before Paramount even got their first down.
Wow.
So, you know, it was pretty much another perfect performance, A's on both sides of the ball for Bosco.
All right. And again, the Braves, 4-0. Jay Sarah, 4-0. So those are your top leaders there in the Trinity League so far as overall record. Let's talk about another undefeated team in the Trinity League. Servite went to 3-0 with a 32-13 victory against Roosevelt of Eastvale. Servite overcame some turnovers in this game, but did get some good production on the ground. What was your read on this game, Scotty?
You know, so far, you know, all the game, you know, prognosticators, you know, have had Servite losing. Then the Friars actually come out and they win. So again, the prognosticators had Servite winning big here. And again, you know, we should have said, or Dan, you know, I think we were wrong, because as Servite, you know, came into this one, they should have, you know, came out big on top, and they actually didn't. You know, they actually, when you look at the score, Servite had to withstand a Roosevelt comeback, you know, and if not for a couple of turnovers, you know, the game would have been closer than it actually indicated. Servite, you know, they got off to that 19-0 halftime lead before Roosevelt scored two TDs, you know, and they brought it 19-14 all the way to the 4-minute mark in the fourth quarter. And then that's where Servite actually capitalized on a Noah Avenger interception, and then Derek Fuentes actually scored 31 yards out to give Servite some breathing room. They missed the two-point conversion, make it 25-13. Then on the ensuing kickoff, Roosevelt fumbles, and then David Cooper scoops up the ball and takes it to Hallis to make it 32-13 Servite with 3 minutes to go. So within a matter of minutes, they go up, you know, extend that lead. And that ended up would be the ball game. Up until that point, the game was tight. Servite, you know, had a bend but didn't break type defense, because they did give up 421 yards of offense, but Roosevelt could only get 14 points to show for it. So,
yeah, I heard Servite had 4 turnovers in that game. That was a number that I had heard. But we should mention that junior Derek Fuentes, like you said, 3 rushing touchdowns of 9, 2, and 31 yards. So some good stuff from the junior. Avenger is a transfer from LoSalle, one of the key LoSalle transfers. There's about 5 former Griffins or so on the Servite team. But I guess it seems like you say the score is a little deceiving for Servite, huh, Scotty?
Yeah, because, I mean, we all thought that they were going to, you know, I had seen another prediction where they had 49-0 was going to be the score, you know, and I know we had talked about, we didn't think Roosevelt was going to give much resistance, seeing how Servite has made those big wins and comeback wins and against teams that they probably shouldn't have. And here, this one was closer than at least I thought. So, you know, and, you know, if it, like I said, game of turnovers, you know, sure changes momentum, and you know, that's basically what happened here.
What are your grades on Servite?
I give them C on offense, C on defense.
C's across the board. All right. I think we missed some grades earlier. What did we going back to
Santa Margarita. Santa Margarita. I had on them a B plus on offense and an A on defense.
All right, Scotty, tough. I mean, 55 points doesn't get the Eagles an A, but okay. It's all right. How about Bosco, 56-12 over Paramount? What were your grades, Scotty?
I said A's across the board.
Okay, A's across. Okay, thank you. All right, let's look at Mater Dei, who went to – they're undefeated on the field. On the field, they're 4-0, but we know they have the forfeit, so they're 3-1. They improved to that 3-1 with a 56-0 victory over visiting St. Mary's of Stockton. So for the Monarchs, three straight shutouts, believe it or not. I mean, they had a great team last year. We know they're the national champions. Now, these three teams are not looking as strong as they probably have in the past, at least obviously St. Mary's. But, I mean, who would have expected, you know, the Bishop Gorman 42-0 game? I mean, we were very surprised by that. La Mirada isn't what they used to be just a couple years ago, 49-0. They were a big time, pretty big time program, at their level, playing in the state playoffs not too long ago, but they've went down, down quickly, and now 56-0. And of course, it was a big night, and Scotty will fill us in on Bryce Young and Brew McCoy and others. But what's your thoughts on this game, Scotty?
Yeah, the story on this game wasn't the fact that, that Bryce went a perfect 16-for-16. It was probably more the fact that Young looked really comfortable for the first time.
Wow.
Since he's been in a modern uniform, and all his throws were on the money. And he hit every receiver in stride, especially Brew, who hauled in five for 186 and the four touchdowns, which is in a modern day, I believe, is a modern day school record.
For St. touchdown Mary's, catches in by a receiver?
Yes.
In a game.
And St. Mary's, even though they were winless, they weren't as overmatched as a La Mirada team. And actually, St. Mary's actually contained Mater Dei's running game, as Dollars and Jacoby's only combined for 39 yards on five carries, and the long of 25 by Harper. So, St. Mary's, was content to stop the run. They loaded the box up. They chose to go man on the outside, and then that opened it up for Young, who did go through his progressions a lot at times. And this was the Bryce Young everyone has seen in his highlight films. But once he was on, there was no need to go back to the run game. Defensively, they recorded their third shutout. They held St. Mary's to a total 47 yards total of offense, 3 yards rushing, 44 passing. Keon Werhudson had added two sacks, and he led the way with eight tackles. And Elias Ricks had his second pick six. However, it was called back. The TD was called back again. No one will find the TD, but so he has, second interception. But, the story here, like I said, was, Bryce looking comfortable in the pocket and outside, and that's key because I think that's deadly. I've heard a couple of other some Twitters saying that, look out, that's going to be trouble for the magician if he's able to be on target. So, but that was pretty much it here. Now we got that, they got that week off to get ready for the IMG. So
it sounds like St. Mary's must have decided to challenge Bryce Young and say, hey, we're going to take away, Harper and Dollars. We're not letting those guys run crazy on us. And Bryce, you're going to have to beat us. And maybe thinking, well, we'll take our chance with Bryce and, one star receiver in Brew who, did catch the four touchdown passes. But is that what you think? They just, St. Mary's said, hey, we're going to try to challenge Bryce and see if he can beat us. And obviously he torched him for 16-for-16.
Yeah, and he spread it around. Mike Martinez had four catches. Cody Epps had three. It wasn't like he just kept, he did hit Brew on the big plays, but pretty much I think two of out of his, Bryce actually, one was slightly out of the pocket, he kind of eluded the rush, pass rush, and then stepped up and hit Brew for one of his two 60-yarder touchdowns. But yeah, when you match, anytime you see that one-on-one, I think that, you know, they're going to look to that. And they decided, well, you know, he hadn't been on the money with his deep balls, and that was the one thing, you know.
Right.
You know, I think the first two games he hit a lot of, he had Brew in the first two games of the season. I think he had him three times and he overshot him. So, but this one, I mean, it wasn't like Brew had to wait. I mean, they were on stride, you know, perfect. You know, Brew didn't have to break stride to make up the catch. So, it pick your poison, you know, and I think that's what's going to be, you know, interesting once we come back with the league. It's like, how are you going to attack modern day? How are you going to play them? You know, I don't think, and I had this discussion with another colleague about, you know, how teams play modern day. It seems to be, for some reason, teams in the preseason always want to play the man. But when they get to league, a lot of league teams always play modern day with a zone, with some type of zone, you know, with the safety over the top, and then allowing, you know, you're going to have to go through your possessions and hit the guys over the middle and fit it into the holes, you know. So, you know, and it always seems to be that's, you know, what Trinity League always shows. You know, they mix up the coverages, but very rarely do they go straight up man, you know, unless they're bringing a full house all out blitz. But well, so that's just something to keep an eye on.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure modern day gave IMG some more things to think about as they start to game plan for this huge game coming up, you know, next week. And we're going to have a lot of coverage of that game. But modern day's on the bye, and the Colossal game is coming up. And I know IMG is starting to roll and look pretty good right now. So, and modern day's, I think they're doing fine injury-wise. I don't think they have, right, Scotty? They don't really have, I guess the one guy really who has not played yet is Darion Green.
He came back this game. So from his hammy, and he actually did, you know, quite well. He had two bat downs, so he could have had one, you know, could have had a pick. But he did have two nice bat down plays. He played pretty much a lot of the game, trying to get his stamina back up because he's missed the past three. So the only one that's pretty much, I think, that's out is nose guard Salazar. He played the first week, and he kind of went down with it. He played through a knee, and he hasn't been back. And pretty much, I think that's the only one that I know of that's out. So
yeah. And what were your grades for the Monarchs?
A and an A on defense.
Okay, straight A's for the Monarchs. So, all right, Scotty. Well, hey, great job on your recaps. And before we move on to previewing this week's games, let's take a look at our players of the week for this past week, September 7th games, and of course that one on Saturday, September 8th. Let's start with Jay Sarah. Players of the game, a lot to pick from. I gotta believe you got Sean Nielsen up there somewhere. What were your players of the game for the Lions?
I went Chris Street, offensive, with 187. He had a 44-yard run and a 47-yard run, one of them being the touchdown, and then the 20-yard touchdown. And then our defensive player, I went with Sean Nelson, three sacks, four tackles. But those two sacks came huge on the last drives, and then you can throw in the two rushing TDs that he had.
Yeah, Nielsen's looking great. Again, San Diego State commit, had him preseason All-County. He had a great year last year. He was, you know, kind of the sidekick to Abdul Malik McLean, who's their big defensive end. But he had a really solid season, and I love the way Coach Harlow's using him on offense. And I really, you know, some of the things you mentioned about the Jay Sarah coaching staff and some of the adjustments, I really feel like they are very connected this year with their players, and I see a big. I just see them coaching a lot better and making, you know, the team is more disciplined this year. Some of their roles are better defined. They've come up with some new wrinkles and moving in some, you know, new personnel as well. So I think they've done a nice job. How about your players of the week? We talked about Santa Margarita, 55-7. I got to believe that you got a certain running back might be their offensive player of the week.
Yeah, Jake Thomas, he's been there, like I said, their go-to. I think he's been probably, if you look at his production, he's probably been at least 75% of their offense. The defense, Connor Burke, who's kind of been a mainstay. I think this is like his second week we've given him, or at least I've given him, play defensive player of the game, 11 tackles, 2 tackles for the loss.
Yeah, I think those are excellent picks. How about St. John Bosco, 56-12 over Paramount?
I'm actually working with the new guy we probably haven't heard much of at all. That's Isaiah Saldana, the backup quarterback,
sure,
for me, 13-14, playing most of the game, 121 yards, and 2 touchdowns. Defensive player of the game, I went with the team defense. Pretty much, they played a lot of guys in and out. No one had more than, I think, like 3 or more than 3 tackles in that game. So, it was a whole team effort on that one.
Yeah, junior John Bonds had one interception. I don't know if you know much about Bonds.
Yeah, that's actually Tyler Vaughn's younger brother, Tyler Vaughn's from USC. He's actually, I have him know him more as a wide receiver. So I know he's one of their up and coming guys. You'll probably hear more about him next year. He may, I know he's a two-way guy, but I know him thinking more of him as a receiver. So,
well, I should not even have doubted you, Scotty. I shouldn't even said you probably, maybe don't know much about him. Of course you do, but yeah, when you have all those, receivers, which they have, you run down it like Hudson and Judd Wolf and Keith Savage a little bit, and McDuffie, and they can throw out tons of guys. They could keep going on, Bailey, and who's the speedster I'm leaving out? Kid going to committed to Stanford. I don't, they have tons of receivers, so I could see why the guy's not in the fold quite yet. Let us talk about players of the week for Servite in that 32-13 victory over Roosevelt. I think you probably have the running back on there, right?
Yeah, Derek Fuentes for his Fuentes. 3 rushing touchdowns, and then scoring that to give him the cushion on the after that turnover made by the defensive player of the game, Noah Avinger. He had that key pick, and he also had a key tackle on a 4th down drive in the final minutes of the game too.
He's one of the key transfers, Scotty. In your opinion, is that one of a key guy from Los Al? I know you've described them as under the radar guys, but here we are talking about him. We've also spotlighted the player from Los Al who returned the opening kickoff for a touchdown against Bakersfield.
Zedekiah Centers and Noah Avinger. Yeah, those are the 2 guys out of their 5 that are starters who have been making the most contributions. Avinger, he's kind of a wiry player. He's, like I said, he's a sophomore. I think he'll just get better. Right now he's probably, 5'11". He's probably 165. Playing that corner spot, so we'll have to get, see how that happens when he goes against those big receivers in league. So,
yes, sir. All right, so modern day offensive player of the week, I gotta believe it could be a certain junior quarterback committed to USC.
Yeah, this one was a tough one because you could either go him or Brew. But Bryce was 16-16, 328, 4 touchdowns, all in the first half. You have to go back to last week. So he's in 2 games, he's 28-31 for 578 and 8 touchdowns for 90%. So like I said, he's warming up. So, and then for defense, a player of the game, Kiarware Hudson, he had this is second consecutive game that he looked pretty good, 8 tackles. Then he had the 2 sacks. Again, it was a little bit, we'll have to see, because he's going to have to come up big in the following week against IMG, because those boys are huge up front. So, they're bigger than most they're probably bigger. They're going to be bigger than most college offensive lines.
Wow.
So, we'll get more into that next week about those matchups.
Yeah, Ware Hudson's going to be big. at D tackle. Same with Evan Bennett at D tackle. Tell us, you know, a guy that tied Ware Hudson for team leading tackles was Jalen Lockett. Tell us a little bit about Lockett, because he's a senior. I think he's playing linebacker, but that's a familiar name to modern day fans, Lockett.
Yes, that's Jonathan Lockett's younger brother from that's the USC defensive back. And he's, you know, it's kind of interesting because Lockett, you know, Jonathan was a defensive back in a skill, and Jalen's actually always been a lineman. He's a little bit different built. He's built more along. He kind of somebody had mentioned they think that he was going to have a season sort of like Legaleo. Because Legaleo was just kind of under the radar his whole junior year, didn't play a lot. He was a spot duty player. It's exactly how Lockett was last year. Lockett, you know, he's about 5'11", about maybe 205, if that, you know, but he's that gritty, quick defensive end, and he's actually played really well in their rotation this year. So they're, you know, he hasn't had the big impact as quick as Legaleo has, but he's made the most of his playing time so far this year.
All right. Excellent, Scotty. Well, that's our players of the week. And as we threw out last week, if you're have a business and you'd like us to sponsor, you'd like to sponsor our players of the week and maybe like to hear your name mentioned on the Trinity League football podcast, hit me up with an email, dalbano@scng.com. That's for Southern California News Group. Or you can hit me up at Twitter at OC Varsity Guy. So, Scotty, I think this week's schedule is pretty darn good. Modern Day's on the bye, but I think there's some pretty good games. And I'm going to start it off with a game I do like. St. John Bosco at Chaminade. You know, Chaminade is one of the better teams in Southern California. They play a very good schedule. And I think this is going to be the best game for the Braves potentially the best game for the Braves before they hit their bye week. And then they take on Jay Serra that last Friday in September. But Chaminade is 2-0, and they played an interesting schedule because they're just coming off. Do you see who they played last week?
I did, and it was very surprising.
Yeah, they played Folsom, and they were at home, and yeah, they gave up 70 points, but that Folsom team is really good, and they scored, they lost 70-34. But, I mean, this is the same Folsom team that opened the season against De La Salle, and that game was, what, 14-0?
Yeah, so, that was surprising, too, because you would have thought that they would have came out rolling up a lot more than that.
But what do you think about this game, Scotty? Is this going to be a pretty good game?
I don't think so.
All right.
Yeah, sorry to kind of blow out your steam. They came out of that one, you know, surprised. I don't know. I was just kind of shocked. I mean, basically, Chaminade was supposed to be highly rated open the season, you know, and then they come out dropping that game to Oaks Christian, who actually may be better than what people thought.
Yeah, I think so.
So, you know, and then Chaminade is averaging 134 yards passing, but they're also averaging 220 yards rushing. And then they're averaging 29 points per game, but they're also giving up 26 points per game. It's somewhat deceiving because they haven't given up a TD in their two wins. So all their points have all come against, you know, in their losses, you know. But if Folsom was able to move the ball at will and score, I mean, I see Bosco going to be doing the same thing. You know, it's going to come, you know, this one's just going to round out, you know. I just think that Bosco has too much down the line, and you know, unless they can come back and they can bring Andrew Van Bully back from Boise State, because he was their big power back last year that kind of did all the damage for Chaminade. Stevens, their quarterback, he actually did, you know, he had a better year last year than what he's showing this year. So I don't know, maybe it's just the supporting cast isn't what we thought it was going to be, but yeah, I think Bosco's gonna, you know, they may give up their 14, but I can't see them going down in this one.
Yeah.
So we're both picking Bosco, and that will complete their non-league season 5-0. We talked a little bit about that last week, how, you know, we've fielded some questions, both of us, about what do you make of the Bosco non-league schedule. And Scotty laid it out, how it was, it's tough for the Braves, not exactly what they wanted to do. But speaking of Shaman, I mean, do you think they're going to win the Mission League, or you think it's going to be Bishop Amont? Is it going to be Alamany? I kind of think that Chaminade could win the league. I don't know if they're going to get through it perfect, because, you know, the winner of the Mission League should get a decent seed in Division One. Because, I mean, like you mentioned, Oaks might be the number four seed, perhaps, in Division One. If it's looking like, if you start about, you know, Modern Day Bosco's 1-2, and then Centennial's a 3, and then okay, Oaks are 4, and then maybe Mission Viejo's your 5, and then you start to wonder about, well, is it Sarah or Chaminade, you know, and what that might mean for Division One in the Trinity League?
Yeah, you know, this league has always been the Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde.
Yeah.
You know, because it never shapes out as you think. I think Chaminade last year was the same way. They ended up losing, you know, all their big early games, if I'm not mistaken, and then they came back to win the league. So I think it's going to be this. I think it will be the same thing. You know, if Amont actually seems to be rolling, you know, can they? You know, can they get that back? Sarah, I saw them play against Pauly. You know, and that game was really close, and Pauly's not the same Pauly. I don't think Alamany has enough. After this week, after this Chaminade game, I think I'll have a better idea of what they're going to do, in league, and it may come down to, you know, that them and Amont. You know, I don't know.
San Gabriel Valley is cheering with Scotty's thoughts about the Lancers, where the Lancers this week play Cathedral of L.A., who's 4-0, and then the guess who Amont plays in their opener in the Mission League, Scotty?
Is it Chaminade?
It is Chaminade. So we got to talk a little Chaminade, because they, like you said, who did they lose in the first round of the playoffs last year to?
You got me. I'm stumped.
Olu right got now. Him.
Olu, okay.
So they, that's, you know, that's where this. I just have a feeling that some Trinity League team is going to be playing maybe Chaminade in the first round of the playoffs somehow, just like last year. So we got to watch the score is what I'm saying, Scotty.
Oh, yeah, as always. And I think everybody else, because, you know, everyone's going to have, depending on what the outcome on this one, or how, the score comes out, you know, everyone's going to, you know, go back to, it's going to round out that underwhelming preseason schedule that everyone's talked about, because I think the teams are going to be combined 9-12, like we said, which is not their fault, you know.
Right.
But they were not, you know, they haven't been challenged once at all, except for maybe one play, and that was that play, that touchdown that Milani scored in that first series, you know, and I think it's the only time Bosco's ever trailed. So other than that one play, you know, Bosco's pretty much, you know, shut everything down. So they haven't faced any type of adversity as far as the football in their scheduling. So, yeah. You know, like I said, we're just probably going to end up waiting for that JCR game, and that will be, give us a better idea. But like I said, we're jumping ahead.
Yeah. Bosco does get that JCR game at home, but like you said, 9-12 opponents record. That also includes an 0-4 Garces of Bakersfield. They've had a tough go. That's probably the one really that's one team that was tough, you know, not adding much to the schedule there. I even remember how you predicted that one. You barely said anything and said, oh, time to move on. But so if we didn't strike a good game potentially in Bosco Chaminade, hey, how about Servite Villa Park? You know, Servite, they're 3-0. This is, strangely enough, after this, they go into their bye week, because they're only playing another bye week, because they're only playing 9 games, and they get ready for Modern Day. So
And then you have this, you know, Villa Park team coming off a 28-13 loss to Mission Viejo. But get this, it was 21-0 Mission at halftime. And then Villa Park won the second half, what, 13-7. I talked to Coach Dusan Ancic today at Villa Park, and they had some, three turnovers in the first half, including some unfortunate ones where an interception hit Villa Park threw an interception off a referee's head, and they also dropped a kickoff and just kind of gave a touchdown. But like you said, Servite's schedule, Servite's performances have maybe been a little deceiving or not as dominant as you have, and maybe you have a Villa Park team that's going to make some quick adjustments, and I think they were very disappointed that I think they wanted to be closer against Mission Viejo. Scotty, do you think this game could be good on Friday night at El Medina?
I do.
All right.
I think this one has a very interesting, outlook, especially when Villa Park, like you said, what they showed against Mission Viejo, even though they had those turnovers, didn't come out with a win, but they played well enough, and gave Mission Viejo all they could give. And at that alone, just, I think it's going to give Servite a game. I thought Villa Park was going to get blown out by the Diablos, and they didn't. Given Villa Park's two previous wins, they weren't all that impressive, against Yucaipa and Redondo Union. Other than giving up those big passing yards to Yellen, they can kind of kept the Mission Viejo running game in check. I mean, containing their running game for four, yards a carry. They did get 100 yards rushing over a little bit, over 100 yards rushing.
Farrell
did, but it was all, kept them in check at under, as 4.2. Paul Fierro didn't have the greatest game against Mission, but he did do some things that will pose challenges for Servite. So this game is a close pick 'em, but I'm going to lean towards Servite because, every time I've picked against Servite, they come back to bite me. So this time I'm going to lean towards Servite and, thinking that they'll, pull this, close one out. So, but like I said, it could go the other way just as well.
Yeah, I'm picking Servite to win. I mean, they obviously made believers of me when I picked against them against Norco. So, and I think I always like picking teams that, are going to a bye, though. This is not exactly the same. They were just on a bye, so I don't – probably the theory doesn't hold up. But I don't know. Well, I think Villa Park still got some things they're trying to figure out. One interesting thing for this game, for all the Servite fans to think about is – so Villa Park, they've got a Purdue-committed 6'6" quarterback, Paul Pfeffer. He's really an impressive-looking kid, really smart. And, an excellent passer. He isn't off to the greatest, hot start that I kind of expected him. I expected him to be a little bit more dominant, but I think he'll kick it in and maybe he'll make some strides this week. But he's coming off, he threw a school record 48 times against Mission Viejo. And I asked Dusan about that. Why are you throwing so much? Was that by design? And he said, absolutely. We didn't want to run it against the D-line of Mission Viejo. We just, we weren't going to go that way. And I was thinking to myself, well, I mean, you're going to be throwing it against a talented secondary of the Diablos with Akili Arnold, who's, I think, has got 5 interceptions now, and JoJo Forrest and some other guys that are, they already have double digits. So they kind of played with fire, in my opinion. But I think, for Villa Park to have some success and help Paul Pfeffer out a little bit, I think they got to, they have to run it a little bit better than that. I mean, I think that was too lopsided for them, but Servite also presents some challenges. I know their offensive line is huge. I don't know about, what do you think about the Servite D line? And do you think Villa Park's going to have the same strategy this week? I got to believe they're going to try to be more balanced.
Yeah, I would think so. But then again, Tucson, Ancients could basically have that same philosophy. We're going to attack Servite because we don't think they have a pass rush. We don't think their secondary is, can match up with Zion and Bonilla And there's one other kid, I'm missing his name. I think he's actually their leading receiver, Hernandez, if I'm not mistaken, but I have to look that back up. But
yeah.
I know, you know, Sunrise D-line is pretty small, you know, and they have, you know, we mentioned that before, Ender Aguilar is their biggest D end at 6'5", 245. I think everybody else is like 5'11", in that 200 of 210 range. You know, I, you know, we'll just have to wait and, you know, have to wait and see how they, you know, how they come out. So
I think the receiver you're thinking about for Villa Park, which will certainly be on Servite's radar, was Isaac Hermosillo.
There you go. Yes.
He caught three TDs against Mission Viejo. I like Dylan Bonilla a lot as a slot. I think he's really talented. They have Noah Sanchez transfer from Whittier Christian. And then, of course, you know, Zion Alfacio, who's a transfer from Modern Day. They have a pretty deep receiving group. And you might be right, Scotty. It could be that Deuce loves his quarterback, and rightfully so. And he's going to throw it 48 times again, or 50 times against the Friars. And maybe it's going to be an air show there at El Medina. We shall see. How about Orange Lutheran coming off a bye week, taking on the road? It's going to be a tough road trip out to the Inland Empire, taking on Heritage, who is, interesting enough, one of the surprise scores of the week, I thought, last week, was when Heritage lost. They lost to Redlands East Valley, and I think it was like 14-12 was the score, if I'm not mistaken. That was
21-12.
Was it 21-12? Okay. Yeah. So that was a... no, it was 12-6, according to Cal Preps. Redlands East Valley over Heritage, 12-6.
I thought I had 20. Well, I have to go back and look. I thought I had 21-12, but...
Okay. I'll double-check that, but I was surprised that Heritage lost that game. But I know Redlands East Valley has played a tough schedule. They're the team that beat La Habra. They've also played Upland already, right, Scotty?
Yes.
So that's a pretty good team they're playing in Rev. But Olu coming off the bye, we're going to hear at the end of our show about what they've been, a little bit what they're working about. But do you think the Lancers can get this W? I think they can.
Yes, I think they will. You know, I think, I wonder if Heritage was looking ahead, because, you know, they were the number six team in Division Two, and they took that upset loss. You know, we'll get a confirmation on the score, but, you know, to a 2-1 Redlands East Valley. And, you know, though Heritage, they weren't rolling teams with their wins over Great Oak and Oak Hills. Defensively, they were giving up 11 points per game, but they haven't seen an offense like Olu since they last saw them last season, winning their 34-21 loss. And I don't think Olu should have any trouble with the Patriots, but you never know. You know, they could be up for that. You know, I know last year they kind of stayed around late, toying with Olu last season before Olu kind of opened it up on them. But I don't think they're as strong as they were last season.
Yeah, interesting. I mean, if Heritage was looking ahead, I mean, next week they even have even a crazier game. They play Cajon, which is, just rolling out there. They might be the best team out in the Inland Empire right now. But it'll be interesting to see where the Lancers are. I think they made some strides in their last game that I'm sure they want to, you know, continue. And then, of course, they're going to get rolling. You know, they need to get on a good roll, because next week they'll be back at Orange Coast College taking on Mission Viejo. So they're not taking a bye before the Trinity League. So, that's going to be – this will be a big week for them to get right back on track. They made those strides against Vista Murrieta, where they protected Hilinski better. They started to run the ball a little bit better and kind of ran Reggie Strong a little bit more. It wasn't completely a Kyle Ford-dominated performance. And obviously the defense made had one of her better games. So they still got some work to do. They've only played three games. So and then all the Orange Lutheran fans can watch Kyle Ford, who made an official visit over the weekend to Washington. What did you think of that, Scotty?
You know, that's interesting about Ford, because I know everybody. I know JT Daniels' dad is really trying to get him over to USC, and you know, rightfully so. They want to get that Trinity League pipeline over there, and you know, I don't know. Something tells me, you know, that Kyle seems to be, I don't know, like, you know, different. I can't put my hands on it, but I wouldn't be surprised if he decided to, you know, go Washington. I know all the, you know, his Servi buddies over there, Irvin's over there. Right. I know he's, I think he's tripped over to Colorado as well. And yes. I know he has his Servi buddies over there. Yeah, it'd be interesting to see where he ends up, ends up going.
Scotty, of course, you know, alluding to how, Kyle Ford started his, prep career with the Friars, and up at Servi is, as Scotty mentioned, Julius Irving and also Keith Price, as well. And also another one is Terrell Bynum, who was a Bosco grad, but spent some time at Servi. Are we missing another guy up there? There's a long snapper, McCarty.
I think that's it for Washington. there's Lytle at over at Colorado. Then Titus Toler committed there as well. Trujillo. Titus was at Servi for a little while, but I don't think Ford was still a little loose. So many guys switching back and forth, it's hard to keep track of these days. But yeah. But they're all brothers. They all, you know, it's Trinity League. They all, like, know each other. They're all friends, you know. So it's not like it was back in the day when there was no Twitter and you had those, you know, those rivalry games and you didn't have any, you know, didn't have Twitter, you know. And it, the only way is to meet up on the field.
That's right. So we'll have to – maybe next week's show we'll talk a little transfer talk, because CIF has done a survey and they got some results back on their transfers, and I'll want to get your opinion on that. But two more games of preview coming up. This last game on Friday, so Faith Lutheran out of Las Vegas coming into California, taking on Jay Serra. Like we mentioned, Jay Serra 4-0, one game away from being 5-0. They can take on the Braves, who we think will be 5-0 in their Trinity League opener. But what's your thoughts on this game, Scotty?
The Faith Lutheran Crusaders of Vegas, 1-2. You know, they're going to come into the tight confines, the Lions Den. You know, I guess this Faith Lutheran team has only one win over Bakersfield Christian. You know, this will be Faith Lutheran's second straight week taking on a top opponent, because they're coming off a 35-21 loss to Chandler, Arizona. And their other defeat came against Colorado's number one team, Valor Christian, 35-0. I don't think Jay Serra should have any trouble with them on this one. So don't be surprised if this turns, you know, I'd be surprised if it turns out to be their third consecutive nail biter game. I think Jay Serra wins this one easy.
Yeah, they certainly could use a, I'm sure that's something, you know, they want to go into their bye week with a little bit more relaxed. I mean, with the 42-35 victory against Pinnacle, 21-20 against Bishop Amont, and then they had a little easier time with Calabasas, but that was still a tough road game. I'm sure they want to. I'm sure Coach Harlow's message is going to be: we need to play some good, fundamentally strong, sound football. We need to take care of our business. We need to get to our bye week. We got to get healthy and doing the right things and have a locked in, focused, and some discipline, because that's what's going to take in the Trinity League. It's not going to be, you know, it's a week to week. It's going to be a lot of focus, a lot of concentration, and taking care of business. They're going to start, Lions, they start going on the road in the Trinity League at Bosco, and then they're home for three straight games: Servite, Olu, and Mater Dei. So they got to play well at home here, and this would be a good way to do it. Let's move to our last game of the night, Scotty, and we thank all the Trinity League football fans for listening to hear us on the podcast. On Saturday, September 15th, Santa Margarita playing host to Orem of Utah. This game's going to be at Tribuco Hills, and it's going to be a 7 o'clock kickoff. So note the site and the time of the day on Saturday. So Orem's an interesting team. Just last week, They played Bishop Gorman pretty tough in that city of Las Vegas. It was 31-21 in favor of Bishop Gorman. So Orem dropped it. It was a little bit lopsided going into the fourth quarter. It was about 25-7 going into the fourth quarter. So Orem played well in the fourth quarter. Interesting in that game, a quarterback that we've seen play a lot. We saw him play this year. He's not really necessarily a quarterback as his best position, but Bishop Gorman's Micah Bowens, who's a really great athlete. I don't know if he exactly projects as a quarterback, though. He's a junior, pretty highly recruited kid. He threw for 233 yards, did get picked twice, but he had, for him to have that kind of yardage and that kind of completion percentage, that was pretty revealing, because I don't think he is that gifted of a, I don't think really quarterback's his position. He might be more a linebacker or a safety kind of guy, an athlete. But what do you think about this game with Orem, which is, seems like it presents a pretty big challenge for Santa Margarita?
Yeah, they're 2-2. They're the third ranked team out of Utah. They lost their opening to Bingham, 39-22, and they came back with their next two wins. Like you said, they played Gorman. Gorman finally, it was like their first game. They finally got their offense going. I don't think this will be as challenging as their other out-of-state game as when they took on Cherry Creek. One thing that I was looking forward to when I saw this game on the schedule was possibly seeing one of the top incoming freshmen in the nation, running back Relique Brown. He was actually going to go to he's a Northern California kid, and he was actually going to go to Orem. He was there, and then a month before the season, he came back home to California and he's actually playing at Edison of Fresno. But he is a dynamic running back. So Orem missed out on that. Cause like I said, I was looking forward to him playing against Santa Margarita in that one. That's for not now. So, but all you diehards, look at that name, Relique Brown. He was actually, he's about a 5'8", 185 pound kid, but he's lightning quick. He plays both ways, for Fresno of Edison, but, back to Orem. I think Santa Margarita gets the win in this one. I think they'll get Orem.
Wow, that would be a huge win. I would almost say that would be as big as win as almost like Jay Sarah beating Pinnacle, because I feel like they played Cherry Creek tough, 21-14. Santa Margarita did, lost 21-14. They're gonna come back a couple weeks later, take on another out-of-state power. That's going to be a big win. If they got it, that'd be a big win, because Santa Margarita, they're going to take their bye next week. And, they open with Orange Lutheran at Orange Coast College. They play Mater Dei on the road, and they don't get home again until they play in the third round of the Trinity League. They play Servite back at Tribuco. I guess I'll go with you, Scotty. Santa Margarita getting a win. It's gonna be a tough one, though. I think they're growing up pretty fast. I like the way they're running it. The Cherry Creek game probably was good for them, so why not?
Yeah, I went kind of back and forth on that one too, but I'm gonna go with the only thing I'm concerned is if they end up having to stop Jake Thomas, because right now he seems to be. Right. Their guy. I think they wanted to let Caselli, I think they're trying to ease him into the offense. I think they realized, after that first game, they thought, oh, this is a great sophomore. Then they came and they went up against Mission, and they realized, they probably got to bring him along a little, slowly, and he's kind of, since then, he's kind of struggled. He kind of got back into the groove a little bit last week. But I think, what's a quarterback's best friend? A running game, Absolutely. So I think that's what they wanted to kind of do, is they're going to rely on Thomas, kind of pound the ball and then kind of pass second. That'll be the difference, I think, whether or not they can, move the ball, because they kept it, you know, Cherry Creek in check. They just couldn't get their offense going enough, or getting enough, you know, production in the offense. And I kind of see that kind of happening in this game. So hopefully they will be able to be on the other side of the win this time.
All right. Well, we got plenty of interesting things to follow this week. And, you know, Scotty, great job as always. Thank you very much.
Welcome, Dan.
You know, and, you know, you're going to be wanting to listen to us next week as, you know, Scotty Barajas breaks down that IMG game. I will try to stick with them as we preview one of the biggest non-league games of the season. It's going to be a gigantic tilt coming up the 21st. It's a TV game. It's going to be live nationally in modern day in the spotlight. So make sure you follow back for us next week. And there's other games to talk about, just like, you know, Mission Viejo, Olu. And we had a couple teams on the bye, but there's going to be plenty to talk about next week. And Scotty, where will you be Friday with the Diablos, with the Monarchs on the bye?
I haven't decided yet which game I'm going to go to, or I might just take the night off. So that will be to be determined. We'll find out next week on our podcast.
We will ask you where he is. I am hoping to catch a little bit of that Servite. Maybe I might catch the end of that Servite Villa Park game as I'm coming back from the Inland Empire myself from a cross country meet I'll be at on Friday night. But we will have it all wrapped up next week. So stay tuned for some comments from Orange Lutheran coach JP Presley. And thanks again for listening to us on the Trinity League Football Podcast.
And I would use the word like everything's a, you know, you're always trying to improve each week.
Yeah.
And, you know, the best part about having the film is you can get better with that. And what I mean by is, hey, there's an opportunity for a dip. You know, there's an opportunity where they're in too high, so let's run the ball. I mean, those are some of the teachable moments we have. But, yeah, it's, you know, I wouldn't say like there's a dissatisfaction with it, but I would say just working on consistency and balance has kind of been our priority, not just for what we do in practice, but when we're game planning as coaches.
Do you think you guys have to run it more to have more success?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's more balanced. So yes, we want to probably run the ball more to, you know, keep everyone honest, so they're not just dropping eight.
Yeah.
And you know, sitting in a zone. But we've played some pretty dynamic teams with, you know, kind of different strategies on how they're going to, you know, stop wide receivers, you know. So that's where we have to really take an opportunity. If they're going to double up on Ford, they're going to double up on Loya, they're going to leave someone, you know, like that. It's kind of during the game that you got to make some of those decisions and adjustments. But, no, we're committed to balance. But we got a great quarterback, great wide receivers. You know, our offensive line has taken some, had some early injuries. So, you know, we've got some guys in different positions. So it's one of those things we're working through as a staff.